The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
It is Tom Dunn in for Anton. As I said, I'm not sure what exactly he's up to, but it seems to involve motorbike boots. You can get in touch via 53106 or for free on WhatsApp 087-1400-106. And I'm delighted to say we're joined for our newspaper panel by Barbara Scully, broadcaster and writer, and Aisling O'Rourke, communications coach. You're both very welcome.
Good morning.
How are you?
Skinny your teeth this morning, Barbara, I believe?
Totally, yes. I am very much indebted to my daughter, who's sitting in her pyjamas in a car, literally outside, who drove me in while I was furiously looking up what we were to talk about. But I'm awake.
Well, like,
and I'm kind of dressed, and
like
I'm here.
Like a bad-tempered school teacher now, I'm going to ask you all the hard questions.
No.
Yes, not my problem. You're here on two wheels.
Thanks,
hard questions.
Well, thanks, Tom. That's really reassuring.
So straight away, thoughts on the budget?
I'm so excited about the budget. I can't wait. No, the big headline, I think, that anybody that I've, and we, the talk really hasn't started, if you like, out in the real world about the budget yet, is the inheritance tax thing.
Yeah.
So that they're going to increase the threshold for children from, I think it's about 330,000 now that you can inherit tax-free. And they're apparently going to bring that up to 400,000, which is interesting because even though that ship has sailed for me personally, but my children, who are all, well, one of them's in her mid-30s, but the other two are in their mid-20s, are already talking about their inheritance.
Are they really?
Because they already have internalised the fact that they're never going to be able to own a house.
Mm.
So they look at the house they're currently living in as being the only house they will ever have any kind of ownership of.
It's very grim, isn't it?
It's very grim. So they'll be, well, not that they won't have affected them.
It's hard to believe how it's changed over our life, though, isn't it? I was with a friend of mine who bought his first house 35 years ago, and he's still in it, and you didn't pay huge money for it, and it was just very attainable then.
Yeah, no, I mean, it is one thing that actually makes me angry is the fact that certainly in my experience, the generation of 20-somethings have accepted that they hear so much of the talk all the time about the generation that will never be able to afford their own homes. And they've kind of accepted that now as being a fact. And that, I think, is terribly sad.
It is awful.
And it's a terrible indictment of not just the current government, but a succession of governments that have allowed this to happen. Because I think, you know, we all remember back being in your 20s or your 30s when you have this overwhelming need to move out of your parents' house and to be independent. And the fact that they can't. And of course, what's happening is, what's happening, Tom? They're all going travelling. I am waving my second daughter off to Australia in 2 weeks' time.
So the travelling is kind of like, I'm not able to get
a house
here.
I'm going to save and I'm going to travel.
Yeah.
God, are you on the same page with that, Aisling? Are you worried about something else?
I'm looking at public transport. So I teach in a college.
Right.
And one of the constant things that we have students saying in college is they genuinely don't have the money for getting to college. On, like, they're, you know, and obviously the college will row in and they'll get, you know, support from the college. But the government apparently is part of these measures. The free public transport card for children is going to go up to the age of 9. Personally, I think it should be for anybody in education.
Yeah, I do too.
I agree.
And I think that, like, we have to, like, look, climate change doesn't seem to get a look in anywhere in the budget talk in the past couple of days. That's coming down the track and we're all going to pay the price for it. At least if children now are brought up in the habit of using public transport, it'll be, that will pay dividends in the long road. Like, I'm from County Offaly.
Yeah.
We don't have a local bus service to get from one end of the town to the other. If I want to go out and say, if I'm coming up and down to Dublin, the last train down to Tullamore in the evening is, like, I don't know, somewhere around 8 o'clock in the evening. You can't have a night out in Dublin. You can't go for a concert. You know, if we could invest in public transport, A, we need it because the system's clearly not working, and B, it will be a benefit in terms of climate change. But perhaps that's too much blue sky thinking of a Saturday morning, Tom.
It just seems when you have the amount of money that they're talking about having in the fund to slosh around, that it seems to me they're looking for places to spend it, really. There's so much money going around.
I think the public transport thing is huge, and I absolutely agree. I think it should be made free for anybody in education. But I also think, in agreement with you, and I live in the suburbs, I live in Cabinteely, and I'm on a good public transport route in and out of town. But if I went to get to Black Rock, which is 2 kilometres away, or Dunleary, which is 2 kilometres away, it's problematic.
Yeah.
So we really do need to totally overhaul our public transport.
And
because when it works really well. I can get into town, no bother. There's a bus every 10 minutes and it flies in. There's a bus corridor the whole way and it's brilliant.
Love it.
But if I'm trying to get, kind of, if I'm not going into town, I'm getting somewhere else, it's a problem.
And so it needs to link up.
Yes.
You know, you need to arrive at Houston Station to get a bus to go to where we need a linked service. It can't be everybody in their own silos.
Yeah. Now, I have to say, there have been attempts to introduce linked services and they've gone down very, very badly with the local community, who are going like, no, I get my 16 at the end of the road and that's where it's always been. That's where it's always going to be. So it's hard.
But like, you look at Berlin, right? Year 2000, turn of the century, it was the largest construction site on the planet. A city that had been bombed to smithereens. You go there now, you can get, you don't even think of getting a car or getting a taxi because it's so easy to get around it. Even as a complete tourist and you don't know where you're going.
Yeah.
You know, we just need to make everyday life easier for people. Yeah. Instead of putting money, like, I know we have to have the rainy day fund. I'm scarred from the recession as much as anybody else is. But I think we need some practical results from
this. Now, there's a thing, scarred from the recession and 2008 and the crash. And in the run up 2008, it was all about budgets where we were throwing money around like snuff at a wake.
Yeah.
So do we feel a bit of nervousness going into this?
Well, there was a very interesting column yesterday in the Irish Times by Gerard Howland. And one of the he made various points in it, which were very good. But one of the points he made in it was our over-reliance on corporation tax is that, you know, our tax receipts are very healthy, but most of it is coming from overseas multinationals that are here and that could walk tomorrow.
Yeah.
And something like, where did I write it down here now? The top 10% of earners in this country pay 63% of the income tax. So, and most of those are working for multinationals or the companies that service multinationals. So again, I think they're, you know, talking about sustainability in relation to climate change, we need a sustainable economy. And I think investment in small indigenous businesses is really something that we're not good at doing. Well, you know, I'd hope, Jeannie Mac, I'd hope we wouldn't go back and have a spectacular crash like the way we did before. But I do think, unfortunately,
after the last one, it's hard not to be nervous, though, isn't it?
It is hard not to be nervous. And the other thing I think that absolutely hobbles things like this, or what you were talking about, Aisling, about public transport, is the short-termism of our politics. Do you know, everything is about just the next election and getting elected. It's rare now that you hear a politician who's willing to start talking about something that would be a longer term vision that ultimately would be in the best interests of the country but might endure a little bit of pain on the way to get there.
I don't know if we make those politicians anymore.
Yeah, now, where are they gone?
I don't know. Where are they gone? A long time ago.
And look, as somebody who works with politicians in the lead up to election campaigns, the advice would be not to talk about those things because as voters we want immediate results. So I think we've a part to play in that as much as anything.
But I do think that the government and politicians and politics underestimate the intelligence. I think we have quite an intelligent and an educated electorate here. And I think if it's sold properly, people will buy into it.
Yeah. So anyway, we're talking more about the budget just after 10. So
your
main things are the inheritance. It's only under 400. Public transport, should we be nervous? Over to Matt Cooper, who is suggesting in the mail today that if there was a TV version of Dáil TV, Pimp My Crib, it would be a huge hit on TV because they've pimped the bike shed for 300 grand. They've now pimped the shed outside going in, the entrance, for 1.4 million.
I know. Man. And it's a strange looking yoke, isn't it? With the lovely copper kind of wavy thing on
it. Nice.
I can see why people are saying it. It's reminiscent of a certain former American president's hairdo.
Oh, it does. It looks like Donald's hair fell off.
It does, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's great. Actually, I can't wait for it to be renamed now. There should be some renaming kind of all of these things as well. Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, Matt Cooper's thing is funny about how if Dáil TV did a Pimp My Cribs around the Dáil and the refurbishment, that it would be wildly entertaining, you know, because Pimp My Cribs is all about these kind of blingy mansions that very often, you know, have no taste at all, but have had millions and millions spent on them. I didn't realise that the overall refurbishment of the Dáil has cost 42 million. 42 million. And the original estimate in 2017. Now, obviously, there was things that needed to be done. It's an old building and I'm sure the roof needed to be done and, I don't know, insulation and whatever else. But the original estimate in 2017 was 8 million. Children's Hospital, anybody?
My God.
It's the same thing.
I think this idea of, well, Pimp Leinster House is hilarious and fair play to Matt Cooper for it. Personally, Matt has suggested that a PR consultant or maybe somebody from the OPW would front this TV show. I'm going to put a spake in for Joanne McNally. I think if it's going to happen, it has to be somebody who's really able to enjoy the process.
Because we wouldn't be watching it. Has anyone ever done a top 10 of how these expenditures have gone wrong? Because it seems every time you lift the stone, you find something very expensive.
I've never seen a top 10, but I mean, anybody who's out in the real world and talks to people in various different walks of life, there is, I think, a general feeling that, oh, if you're tendering for something, for a government contract for something, mm-hmm. there'd be loads of money in that.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There'd be loads of money. So, you know, you'd up your thing. There's the kind of competitive marketplace seems to miss anything where there's government money kind of behind
it. When you look at it, work's being done, the pay seems to be glacial. Can we throw in Dunleary Baths into this? Remember,
Get me started.
Being redeveloped for generations.
But it looks awful.
And there's no baths.
And I'm saying that as somebody who has grown up in Dunleary and loves Dunleary. Apparently the baths are under the concrete.
That's great, isn't it?
What's that about?
I don't know.
Yeah, like, it looks awful. It looks like a bunker.
Yeah, I think it is under the concrete. Have you seen this? Please.
We're great at building eyesores, but then again, maybe that's what the aim is with the security hut, that it'll be, you know, attractive to look at.
And it was supposed to be a bath. That's all I would say. And the Dunleary Baths is not a bath, right?
No,
it's a big concrete, just nothing.
And when I saw the scaffolding going up, I said, my children will be grown up before this is ready. And I was right. Yeah. That's all I would say. And I don't know what it costs. And can we also, I don't think anyone's talking about the darts. That's, we're talking about public transport.
The dart.
There's no dart this weekend mm-hmm. again.
There's no dart at all.
No. Oh. Friday and Saturday and Sunday. And I live out there and the effect on local business is really bad. Really bad.
But I presume maintenance is needed or something. Is that,
there's been a lot of weekends. I don't know if anyone could tell us off the top of their heads how many weekends it's been in the last 12 months. But it's been a lot of weekends.
Coming back to what Aisling was mentioning about public transport and about climate change, I do not know why we don't invest money in, along the Dart line and perhaps the Lewis line as well, putting in cycle tracks. Literally along the side of the Dart line. You certainly could on the Dart, most of which goes along the sea, even if you had to build a bit of a boardwalk out. Yeah. That would be an ideal commuter route in and out because it's flat and there's no junctions and it would encourage more people to cycle.
I think there is a Dublin coastal route for a Greenway type thing underway at the moment because I know at the port there was a cycle track open during the week.
Opened,
but like, you know, as the only culture in the room, you know, like, count yourselves lucky to have a dart, is all I'd say. You know?
I'm just going to put it out there. I've seen people walking up and down the local businesses saying all the restaurants are very quiet. Yeah. Are the darts on? No. Yeah. So it's a real pain for all the business all along the coast, Dunleary, Dalkey. Yeah.
You'd wonder why they couldn't do maintenance like the way they do on the N11, which is at night time.
Yeah.
You know, an awful lot of nights you're coming out on the N11 and it's blocked off because they're doing nighttime work. So you'd imagine they could do that.
53106 for your text or WhatsApp 087 1400 106 and a few texts. It's not just the next generation who can't afford houses. I'm a single parent and I have a great job that pays well. But on a single income, there is no prospect saving for a deposit or house while I'm paying rent of $3,000 a month.
That's
the cost of living. You're locked in there.
Yeah, no that is. And situation. I mean, you know, that she makes a really, I presume it's a woman because most single parents are women.
And if you think transport's bad in cities, try the rural areas. That's what you're saying.
That's singing Aisling song.
I love how you guys try and excuse the government by bringing in previous governments without emphasising it's primarily the same two political parties.
Well, that's true. That's 100%. Fair enough. And I think we're going to be the same again. Yeah.
Which brings us to our next item.
Okay.
Sinn Féin. Mary Lou says, prepare for an election. And it's the countdown to the election. Has that word flown for them a little bit, you think?
I have to say it's one of the oddest things that Sinn Féin, you know, a few surveys or whatever you call it, surveys ago, Sinn Féin were on the up. And young people who have no memory of kind of the things that maybe the older generation, the links that we would have in our heads with Sinn Féin and the troubles in the north, don't have that. So therefore, Sinn Féin put an awful lot of money, I presume, and effort into their housing policy. And it all seems to have just kind of gone out with the tide.
Has it, though?
Has it? I don't know.
If Simon Harris has his way, it's going to be winter, you know, next 2025, before, you know, in February, March, before we have an election. An awful lot can happen between now and then. Remember 2019, Sinn Féin had an awful day at the local elections then came back with force come 2020's general election. I just, I know, and like I was reading Elaine Lochman in the Irish Examiner has a really good column on it today, but I just wouldn't be counting them out just yet. I think if Sinn Féin's talking at the Ardèche in Athlone this weekend in this manner,
yeah,
that's going to get out to their supporters and their campaign will be strong on the ground. So I wouldn't be counting chickens for any party just yet.
Their manifesto on the arts is very strong. I just represent that. They've put a lot of work into it. And
on the arts?
Yeah, on music and AI and artists making a living wage and all those kind of things. They've done an awful lot of work on that.
Yeah,
I'll just say that. You were talking about politicians, not going the course or those kind of career politicians not really being around. Brings us to Leo Varadkar, who is in the news a lot at the moment, saying things that are kind of very attention grabbing, like reunification, for instance.
I wonder, was Leo getting a bit lonely? Was he, the limelight had moved on, and I don't know, maybe this is part of what's going on here. But he said that all parties should treat the Irish unity as an objective, not an aspiration. And Mary Lou responded by saying that Leo seemed to have found his inner shinner. Which, maybe has, but I think he has talked before about a new Ireland and about Irish unity being something that should be kind of on the agenda now, and calling for a new Ireland forum to tease out the details of how a new Ireland or a united Ireland would look. Is he just saying this because, to generate conversation, or is this something that he really believes? I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert, and I'm aware of the fact that, again, at my age, I can remember the Troubles and all that stuff very clearly. And I mean, I don't know a lot, like a lot of people of my generation. My daughters have been to Belfast more often than I have because they just consider it as a great fun place to go and with great nightlife, whereas I still have a slight kind of Belfast. So, my feeling is that this kind of talk is still a little bit premature. There's so many things in the North, like segregated education and segregated communities are still a problem. And I don't think that there has been enough work done in order to break that down, which I think would have to happen before we start seriously looking at a new Ireland or a united Ireland.
What do you think, Ashley?
My mum was a banker. And in 72, to train, she had to go to Belfast to train in Ulster Bank's college for bankers. And so I grew up being very aware of what was going on in Northern Ireland. It was part of the conversation at home, watching the news every single night. Young people nowadays, I don't think, have that culture at home in being aware of where we've come from. And it's great that we have come on in that length of time. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea from Leo Varadkar. Look at what the Citizens Assembly has achieved. If a coherent structure is put in place to actually discuss this and plan ahead for the future, all for it.
But is there not one huge group of people in Northern Ireland who might feel different about that and say, what's that man down south talking about us?
That's what an organisation like that would be for, bringing in perhaps something like reconciliation like they had in South Africa and Rwanda. This is possible, but it would need to be led in the right way. It needs to be something that's not necessarily as part of an election manifesto for the next general election.
Well, we don't know what he's doing next, do we?
Yeah. Do you not think there's a danger that we would be premature in holding a cross-border poll?
I think
if we do that too early, it'll, because the peace process is still ongoing, delicate.
Getting 100%. A forum together now so people over the coming years can discuss and plan for the future. Talking about us going to the polls,
it's too early.
I won't go into what you mentioned about the numbers of immigration levels as well.
Because
I want to talk about friendship before we wrap this up. Because it says women get lonely, but they make time for friends. Unlike us men, who just stick with the first two people we meet in school, and that's us done for life.
As a single person, and in my group of friends, I'm the only single person. I totally get it. Yeah, it is. Look, don't get me wrong. I love my life. I'm lucky to have a home of my own. I have a great career. But yeah, obviously it gets lonely. And you'd love to have more social activities, but cost of living crisis, we're all counting the pennies. And particularly in my age category, late 30s, early 40s, family at home takes priority. So we're not as good at keeping up with each other. I think I think it's probably fair to say that men do get on with it a bit more, and men have more, like, because stereotypically men are more likely to be involved in sport later in life. They have the golf club, the tennis club, and those outings that they wouldn't necessarily think of as being social, but are actually social and a way of keeping connected to the community. Whereas women were probably not as good at things like that as we should be. And I think there is a level, and I know in the mail we're talking about the element of shame and embarrassment around it. You know, it's not exactly the easiest thing to say, to phone up a friend and say, look, I know you're happy with your 3.5 kids and your lovely dovey hubby, but I'm a bit lonely tonight, you know?
Yeah, it's hard to say.
It's a hard conversation.
Yeah, I mean, my experience being a lot older is that, like, women's friendships tend to be very elastic as well. Like, I know during those years that you describe, if you've young kids and you're paying a mortgage and you're working and all that, life is very busy, you don't have as much time for friends. When you get to my age, then your friends are back as being very much part of it. But it's interesting, Jane Fonda said, I was only looking at this online recently, Jane Fonda quoted a survey that was done by Harvard that said that not having female friends is as detrimental to women's health as smoking.
My Lord.
I think we recognise the necessity to have our friends, and I think we're far more honest and we talk more deeply with our female friends than men do if they do have friends.
No question.
So I'm really glad I'm a woman, Tom.
I don't know what to say to that. I feel I'm about to say, I'm glad you're a woman as well, Barbara.
That would sound a bit creepy, Tom. Yeah, we all say that.
I'll just leave it at that, okay? Yeah, thank you. Fair. Barbara Scully, broadcasting writer, Ashton, our communications coach. Thank you both very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.